looking for a little excitement in your life, looking for your goggles to steam up and your tail to curl, looking for discreet adults to whinny with? Well, come clop, my lord. Pick up the phone and call the Arrow Exchange. Nay. Collapse on a pile of straw with a bucket of oats and call us now. Your first 5 minutes are free. So get ready for some truly saucy horseplay. Find your main kink. Hoof it to the Arrow Exchange tonight. Don't be a naysayer. Be a hay player. So there's a saucy Valentine's themed introduction.
That was something else.
Infamous Night Exchange and Grapevine commercials.
Wow.
It is the very saucy month of February.
Well, I guess now it is.
Now it is, yeah. I am your host, Matt. This is my co-host, Chris. Chris, how has been your month of February?
Well, it hasn't been hot and saucy. It's been cold and snowy. So I guess a little heat would be nice, but no, we're having most snow in the forecast. As expected, you know, winter is fantastic. Winter is eternal. I don't know how long it will last. Spring? Well, yeah. Spring is just miles away. It's a distant thought. Like, what does grass look like anymore?
So have you been getting lots of snow, or has this been cold, or what?
Lots of snow. I think the most we got was a couple of, you know, weeks ago. I think it was sometime after we recorded the last podcast. We got 30 inches of snow.
But wasn't it blizzarding while we recorded the last podcast?
Yeah, it's, you know, it was just non-stop snow here. Let's just say, go with that. At least I'm not Boston. I'll just say that much. Besides, you know, being miserable about the winter being so long and so cold. Otherwise, game-wise, the only game I've really been focusing on is still Tales of Vilia 2. I think last month I said I started it, and as of this month I did beat the game. As of now, I have done 4 out of the 5 endings. The 3 main endings I've done, I did the bonus ending where you pay up all your debt, and it was very awkward, and thanks, Tails, for your really awkward hot spring scenes. That's just what I wanted. Again.
If you didn't have a hot spring scene, people would be like, oh, this isn't a real Tails game.
Yeah, exactly, right? As far as I know, the last ending I need to get is you get through a cameo battle. I'm not sure what the requirements for that are, but it's apparently through the Colosseum, and you need to do it on Elite Mode. And the Elite Mode of the Colosseum does not mess around. I had to push the difficulty around so many different times in this game. But yeah, they don't mess around the Colosseum in this game. Like, I remember in Zillia 1, I could just spam Tidal Wave, and then everything would die. No, you actually have to put some work into the Colosseum now. I think they picked up on that from Zillia 1. But overall, I did really enjoy the game. I still really like it. Characters are great. You know, the returning ones, and especially new ones like Luger. The battle system was a really big improvement from the first game. Just so many combos in that game. It's like, you thought there were a lot of combos in Zillia 1 you could do. There's like a ton more you can do in Zillia 2, but I think that always keeps the battle really interesting.
Well, you said a couple of characters have multiple fighting styles, right?
Right, yeah. They're all pretty different. The story, it definitely did some things to my heartstrings. I mean, I really say that games make me cry, but Zillia 2, it got the waterworks going at points. It was terrible.
All that money lost.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, the writing isn't amazing or anything, but, you know, you get attached to these characters and you get attached to the story, so when bad things happen, you know, it gets you, so. It was a really good ride overall, even though, you know, it just gets sad a lot of times, and I guess it was very resolving at the end, so that was good.
That's good. Does it leave room for Zillia 3, or you think it's done?
If you really want to say, if you really want to take certain elements out of the ending, you could say Zillia 3, but I think the game is pretty much done, unless they want to somehow add more to it.
Yeah, they might have to make a new environment if they made a new game, so.
I mean, they're already moving on to Tales of Vesperia, so I think they're going to take a break from Zillia. I think the two games were enough for now, but maybe like so, 10 years down the line, they'll add more.
Now that you've played through both Zillia games, the real question, you know, of monumental cosmic importance is, which game has the more fresh mutton?
Oh, man. I think I think one, maybe? I don't know. You can never buy fresh mutton. What's up with that? It's not even a dish you can make. Like, what is that?
You can never buy fresh mutton, yet they incessantly advertise it.
Maybe so. That's why. That, like, the whole party is just so avoiding fresh mutton, because that's only here. They just, like, don't want to cook with anything involving it.
So that crowd clip returns in Zillia 2.
Yeah, it does.
It's like you go to space or whatever, and you still hear the same kind of... Anyhow, I used to just cringe when I heard that in Zillia 1, because it's like, you know, get a new crowd sound effect. But
no, you don't.
Eventually, I guess it's almost like Stockholm Syndrome. You kind of get used to it. It's
you still get used to it, and then, you know. It's kind of jarring when, like, bad things happen in the game, and then you go to a town, you're just fresh mutton, and I'm like, oh, okay, great. Thanks for reminding me about that.
I still gotta eat, you know.
I still gotta eat the fresh mutton, but you can't eat the fresh mutton. That's the problem. Yeah, so last one I also complained about, you know, the worlds being repetitive, because you basically explore the same places again. But the new areas, I thought they were good. I mean, just a few more areas in Olympios, the second world. Surprise, there was a second world. I guess we've essentially spoiled this so many times. And also, yeah. It's a Tails game. What else is new, right?
Well, Tails games, yeah, they do hit all the same things every time, so...
And yet we still keep playing them for some reason. But yeah, the new areas, I thought they were good. It does get kind of repetitive with Monster, but that seems to be a problem with all Tails games as well. That is a recurring problem in this series. So in a way, it's bad, but it's also something expected. Post-game content is a lot better than Zillia 1, where Zillia 1 just had that really terrible dungeon that went on for forever. I mean, Zillia 2 also has a really tedious post-game dungeon, but there's just more to do, and it's at least more varied than Zillia 1's repetitiveness. I mean, it also is repetitive, but at least it has some elements that switch it up, so it's not as boring. And post-game, you need post-game to do the Devil's Arms, because you don't get any of them in the main game, I think. Or maybe you do, I just haven't been paying attention to the Colosseum up until post-game, anyway.
Yeah. Devil's Arms are usually tied into either a super boss or a dungeon or something like that in the games, right? So.
Right.
Is there a sword dancer?
Not that I know of. You never know.
Might just be a Symphonia
thing, yeah.
Thing.
Were they in Abyss as well?
There's sword dancers in Abyss, yeah.
Yeah. I gotta play Abyss one day. It's really...
Yeah, you do. You do gotta play Abyss one day.
I know. It's on my list. I know. Actually, going back to the characters of Zillia, one of the things the story does is try to do character episodes where they try to focus on the characters. I think for the most parts, they were really well done. Some of them felt a little too rushed and, I guess, not really conclusive, which bothered me. But I do appreciate how they do, like, a good introspective of the character and, like, how they're trying to go on with their lives after Zillia 1. Like, Jude's still going off about his research, and then Leia currently is working as a reporter, and that's her story, is what it means to be an editor and a journalist and getting a good story. So that's actually pretty fun.
That's cool. So that was Leia as a reporter?
Yeah, Leia as a reporter. Yeah.
She changed gears then.
Yeah, she didn't want to be a nurse anymore. She wanted to be a journalist. I feel like there's so much to say. I don't want to say much because it is still pretty spoilery at times. So
yeah,
I really want to delve into things, but like, it's like every chapter there's a new twist or new information that really starts putting the game together, but it's like everything's spoilery, so it's really hard to discuss the story, but it's a good story, I think, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoy it. It's definitely not a game you can play on its own. You need to play Zillia 1, but from what it builds up of Zillia 1, it's really well done.
So it's not a standalone game,
though. No, definitely not.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind playing it at some point. I think I was maybe a bit inundated with Zillia when Zillia 2 came out, because I did both paths. But maybe in after a while, I wouldn't mind playing this one, too.
Yeah, once I finish up whatever I want to do in Zillia 2, maybe like just finish up most of post-game, I'll probably go back to Zillia 1 and do Melee Side, and then probably do New Game Plus of Zillia 2.
Yeah, it might keep it fresh for you.
Yeah. Might be weird to go back to the old battle system, but it should still be, you know, it's a good series. The Zillia set.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I've been up to. Matt, how has your saucy February been? your saucy winter season?
It's been cold as well. It's been icy and it's been cold. And and slippery and all that. But, you know, the cold never bothered me anyway. So, it's like, man, you gotta get in with your inner Frozen. You gotta get in with your inner Frozen. You know, my homie Elsa. My bro Olaf. Gotta enjoy the winter.
I mean, last month I said I was making Frozen 3. Are you implying that you're making Frozen 4?
Yeah, I started as Elsa's son. No, it's been cold, and it's starting to warm up a bit now. I'm hoping it starts warming up towards, you know, the latter half of March, because I've got stuff planned, but it's been cold, and it's been snowy. And only really the dogs like it, and, you know, the dogs playing in the snow kind of softens my dislike of it, but no, I'm still kind of tired of it. When, you know, knock on wood or what have you, it hasn't been as bad as last winter, but it's still a bit tedious.
Still like the second Arctic over there, or no?
No, it's not that bad right now. It's not that bad right now. We had a couple of days of melt, so it's just that things melt and then they refreeze, so everything's a sheet of ice.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it's like here, too. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to get through what I've been up to quickly, because I have actually have quite a bit that I did, because it's been snowing. I've been, you know, doing snowed-in kind of stuff. Before I get started on anything, I do want to mention the best news of February. The absolute best news is that...
The best funky news?
The best funky news is right. Is that Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove Kickstarter is currently running. I haven't checked the figures, but it's probably about halfway to goal by now. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that Kickstarter. There's been talk of a new Toe Jam and Earl, kind of rumors of it for a couple of months now. And I don't know if it'll make it to platforms. I think Human Nature has a decent rapport with at least some of the console proprietors, so it could make it there, but either way, I'm excited to play it. Before I got to OGM and Earl, I wanted it forever, and I immediately wanted another game like it, so, you know, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that.
Is it supposed to be similar to the other games? Then again, I've only played that one game, and I know there are, like, what, three games in the series?
Yeah, well, I haven't played Toe Jam and Earl 3. It's Xbox exclusive. I kind of wish that that would hit even the digital marketplace now. I kind of wish it would.
Like so Steam or something, it. Even.
Steam or PSN or XBL wouldn't help me right now. But the Kickstarter's interesting because they probably could have got a publisher for Toe Jam and Earl, but they want to do it crowdfunded so they can make the game that they want to make, rather than get it changed. Like Panic on Funkatron was never meant to be a platformer, but that was just the kind of publisher pressure that they had to face for it, and they had to change to survive kind of thing. And right. To be fair, some people really hate on Panic on Funkatron. It's not a bad game. It's just not what you expect. You know, it's just not what you expect it to be. So yeah, I'm excited for that Kickstarter. I'm really excited for it. Been playing a lot of funk this last week. Been playing a lot of funk. So, it's good. It's good for the spirits.
I'm gonna bring back those ice cream trucks, ready to mow me down.
Yeah, there's probably gonna be ice cream trucks. It seems largely like a remake right now, but there'll be more elements, I think. So, ice cream trucks, probably a good chance.
Well, I welcome it. I welcome its grand return.
Now, I watched a lot of movies over February. I'll only mention a couple. I did see Seventh Son at theaters, and it was okay. It was pretty average fantasy action movie. It seems to be really getting panned by critics, but, I mean, that's as par for the course of that kind of movie. It sort of directional in parts, and some of the character interactions are off, but, you know, it's not bad. It's decent action. Good popcorn movie, and that's all I really wanted it for. When you're going shack wacky in February when there's all snow everywhere, it's like, whatever, it just needs something. They, you know, just need something like that, and that was served its purpose. I mentioned the movie Calvary, which is a terrific movie. It's an Irish movie that I've wanted to see for a while, and I've been interested in seeing it for a while now because of the concept of it. It's a really interesting premise. essentially starts, and this is not a spoiler because this is in the trailers and it's the premise that the movie's sold on, is that it starts in the confessional and this guy's telling the priest that he's going to kill him in a week. And, you know, why? It's because he was molested as a kid by a priest, but the priest that molested him, he's dead. And he says there's no sense in killing a bad priest because no one will care, but if he kills a good priest, then that'll make a splash and that'll, you know, be something to talk about. You don't see the face of the guy who's talking to him at the start of the movie, and all through the movie it follows him through the week, and you're kind of guessing, you know, based on who's saying what to him and the tone of their voice and things like that, like who's gonna, you know, kill him. But the movie doesn't dwell on that a whole lot either. It's an Irish movie, so there's a lot of dark humor in it, and it's a movie, it's like the setting of it is around this priest, but it's not really a religious movie. It's more about forgiveness, and it's more about human nature, and it's more about human darkness and things like that. So it's sort of a bit slow for some people maybe, but it's very well acted and very compelling. Like, the main characters are very compelling, and I don't know, it's a drama, and I found it really, really good. I really liked the premise, and I really like how it played out, and it just kept you guessing the whole time, and it was pretty damn interesting.
Yeah, it does sound really interesting.
It was a different kind of movie, and I give Irish movies a chance once in a while because they're usually pretty good, usually pretty funny. This one wasn't funny the whole way, but it had its moments too, so yeah, they're usually pretty raw, and they're usually pretty good, so I like them. Moving on, I did start reading again. I read Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions, and this is another, it kind of goes in line with Calvary, I guess, because it's another sort of dark human nature kind of story. You know, I think I've talked about Cat's Cradle on the podcast before, and that's a very fatalistic novel. This one sort of is, too. It's about, again, human nature and about, like, the power of ideas, but also the danger of ideas, and, you know, humanity as a machine and things like that. Probably the most vulgar of Vonnegut's books I've read, and, you know, it's not lewd for the sake of being lewd, but sometimes it is, but it's a satirical book, so there's, you know, there's purpose to what he's doing. It's a really good read, and if you like if you like satirical books about the human race, especially first world culture, you know, it's my reading rainbow. It's my reading rainbow bit here. If you like books about how the first, you know, about the first world, this is the book for you. And all, it's good. I like Vonnegut, and this didn't disappoint. This is one of the books that most people that are fans of Vonnegut have told me to read. I haven't read a ton of his stuff so far, but I always enjoy it when I do, and this is no exception. Like, if you don't have a sense of humor, they're probably not a book for you, and if you don't read between the lines when you read books, it's not a book for you. Because if you read it, you think this guy has such a fucking miserable outlook on the human condition. And it is fatalistic, and it is dark, and it is damning, but it's, you know, if you read between it, there's, you know, there's purpose to what Vonnegut says, and it's definitely not malicious, but you have to read it with an open mind. As for games, I finished up Dark Souls 2, and I didn't have very much to go after the last cast, so I basically got the platinum medal, and then I did the free Scholar of the First Sins content that came out in early February there. And
that's more DLC, so, yeah?
It wasn't DLC so much as a patch.
Oh, okay.
It kind of adds in a new NPC, and it changes the descriptions of a lot of items that make the lore more obvious. In a lot of cases, like, really obvious in some cases.
Mm.
There's one question as, you know, what did so-and-so take? And now it says, outright tells you what he took. Like, there's not left guessing anymore. And stuff like that, I kind of think, you know, there should be stuff left up to mystery. Especially in Souls, where it's vague, but, you know,
maybe, like, external material, not really in-game. It just seems so spelled out.
Yeah, you might get it through, like, an interview or something.
Yeah, so, yeah.
No, it's definitely spelled right out in a lot of places now, and things are changed, and there's going to be a new version, I think I mentioned, of Dark Souls 2 in a month or two, and that's going to be the version they get. It'll have probably new content, like actual new gear and things like that. That's what you probably going to get, and it'll be rebalanced, and it'll be, well, might not be rebalanced, who the hell knows, but it'll have, like, shuffled enemy locations and things like that. So that's going to be the version to play, I think. I don't know if I'd ever get the PS4 version or updated version now after playing so much of the version that I have, but, you know, I might sometime, but I wouldn't go for Platinum again or anything like that. Just have fun with it. But yeah, no, Dark Souls 2, final verdict, good game. Not necessarily great, but it's still a pretty damn good game. It's, has its flaws, but it's still pretty good. Now, I did play another Souls game, but I'll save that for the end of it here. I do want to talk about Life is Strange before I move on. And this is a different sort of game. It's sort of a Telltale style game. Like, when I say Telltale style game, I'm saying like kind of like The Walking Dead, and in that people will remember what you do and dialogue trees and things like that.
Right, yeah.
It's an adventure game in a Telltale style. I mean, Life is Strange, the first installment of it, there wasn't a whole lot to do, I found. And looking back, I guess I did go to a lot of locations, and I did talk to a lot of people, but it just seemed like there wasn't very many tasks to do. In retrospect, it kind of was, but it just seemed like it went by really quick. It's sort of an establishing chapter. It's an episodic game, so this is sort of the establishing chapter. Max is a good character. I guess it stands to note that they went to a lot of publishers until focusing on Square Enix, because Square Enix was like the only publisher that was going to allow them to keep the main character as a girl. And where...
That's kind of messed up.
Yeah, it is kind of messed up. But, I mean, I'm glad that they did, because that's a character that I've never had the chance to kind of relate to. So I do like when I'm given the opportunity to relate to a different kind of character. I'm not going to get into a whole debate about that stuff here, but I think that unique games are essential to the growth and continued health of video games. So, you know, all the power to them, make this game. And she's a good character. She has good internal monologues. I found the interactions between characters maybe a bit stiff, and I don't know if it's because these guys are new to it, or if because they're high school kids and they're just awkward. I can kind of give it a pass for that, but it just kind of felt awkward sometimes, especially, I won't talk about who Chloe is, but Chloe and Max, their interactions seem kind of really weird at times. It did establish a lot of elements in the first one. I don't know if the game wants to be Degrassi or if it wants to be Twin Peaks. I have no fucking idea at this point, but there's definitely some Twin Peaks kind of things going on here with the missing girl posters that are up all over campus. It's kind of like a Laura Palmer kind of character by the sounds of it already, but, you know, and she's missing, and there's lots of red herrings, I think. I mean, I think they're red herrings, who knows, at this juncture. So it'll be interesting to start unraveling that mystery. It's interesting that... I keep saying interesting.
Well, it's good that it's interesting and not uninteresting. So there's
That's true. The main mechanic that sets this game apart is that Max can rewind time. So when you do an action or fail to do an action, they'll say, you know, this will have consequences. But if you go back in time and do it differently, it'll also say this will have consequences. So it's not like cheating, because you're second-guessing yourself and thinking, you know, gee, how's this going to play out down the line? I hope that what I've chosen, you know, has real ramifications to the game's plot, because I think giving the opportunity to rewind it, I've had more conviction with my choices, because it's like, no, this is what I thought first. I'm going to stick with it. But you go back and you see basically how both scenarios play out, and then you pick one that you want to go with. There's no context yet as to whether one or the other will be the right choice or if they'll have any impact. I hope they do. But it's kind of interesting that when you're given the choice to change your decision, you might play around with it for a while. It actually makes the decision more difficult. So that's interesting. And interesting is the new cool. No, it's you know, it's got some surreal stuff in it. She's a photography student, and it's kind of like, It's kind of like high school, but kind of like college. Anyways, she's in a photography class, and that's interesting. That's interesting. Well, she's in a photography class, so that's different. She's a young female heroine, so that's different. It's sort of a unique setting and a unique character, in spite of high school being like the most overdone shit setting in media. It doesn't feel so bad here because it's well done. It's just kind of rough around the edges, really. But I did buy the rest of the game, so I do look forward to seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, I've been interested in it. Well, ha, I can use interesting as well.
I'm going to try not to say interesting very much the rest of the cast, but...
You know, now that we've said it, now it's just going to keep happening. Like, damn. But anyway,
it's like cool.
Yeah, it's definitely caught my attention, so I'm glad you started talking about it, because I would like to pick it up soon.
I think at least you'd like the characters. Like I said, I can't talk too much about the gameplay yet, because there hasn't been a whole hell of a lot of it yet. But, I mean, you don't really play a Telltale game for the gameplay, I guess, so.
You do it for the characters and the setting and all that.
Yeah.
And props to Square Enix. Thanks, Square Enix.
Now, the worst game that I played this month is Demon's Souls.
Yeah, it's the worst, yeah.
No, I really enjoyed Demon's Souls. I got to it this month. And I played through it pretty quickly. I think I played through this as quickly as I did because I've got the Souls background already, so...
Yeah, look at you with your badge of Souls Honor.
I got the hat trick now. I've got all platinum.
Yeah, so. Look at you. Is that hat made out of pure Bladestone?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's not very many fancy hats in Demon's Souls. That's a disappointing thing.
Yeah, it's not as good as Fashion Souls as it should be.
No, I enjoyed this game. I found it funny how many parallels there actually are between Demon's Souls and Dark Souls. Like, I'm not going to color your opinion of Dark Souls, but when you get to play that, you're going to be like, you know, damn, this is like right from Demon's Souls.
This is right from Demon's Souls.
Literally, I don't know if it's because From is like, okay, now we can make Demon's Souls for multi-platform, but we can hide it, you know? So, some things are really, really lifted from Demon's Souls. And I thought that, you know, am I going to find this redundant because I've seen everything already? But no, Demon's Souls does enough of its own
flavor.
And I know it was the original, right, but I'm already colored by playing the two Dark Souls games. So it's still fresh. I mean, I know how to respond to a lot of scenarios and situations already. And that's just, again, from experience, but I kind of found it funny how many similarities there actually are. I now know where the bloodstained skirt comes from and things like that. So it's cool to see the connections. Demon's Souls is pretty damn good on its own grounds. It's definitely really atmospheric. The Tower of Latria is like one of the most atmospheric levels in the game that I've played. Just, you know, walking around that prison and you can hear the chimes of the Mind Flayer guys. And
that guy going, help me!
Help me!
Thanks, Rydell.
You know, it's good. I mean, I liked the contiguous level design of Dark Souls more, I think. Like, I like the connectivity of it. Whereas Demon's Souls, it's kind of really linear. But that's fine, I think. It was still had really good level design, it's just in more linear fashion.
So I'm assuming you took the hub world fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Boletaria and Latria and the Shrine of Storms, they all had brilliant, brilliant level design. Valley of Defilement had shitty level design, but it fit thematically.
Yeah. I hope you loved 5-2.
No, I didn't. I'll tell you what, fighting the Black Phantom NPC in 5-2 was one of the most difficult fights in the game because I was dead set I was going to do it melee, and you can't really move in that swamp.
You can't roll, but they can.
Yeah, but they can roll, and their sword goes through your shield if you're blocking and causes bleeding. And bleeding's not that bad in Demon's Souls, but with everything else going on, it's not preferable. So that was a bit trying.
I know, nothing is better than, you know, a dark area and the water is poisonous and you can't move that well.
Yeah. I don't think it's spoilers to mention Blighttown, because everyone knows Blighttown has heard of Dark Souls.
Yeah.
But at least that swamp is lit up, and at least you have a means of moving quickly in water in Dark Souls. It's a bit obscure to get that means, but you do have means of moving quickly in water. So there's ways around it in Dark Souls, and even though the visibility is bad in Blighttown, it's just lit up. Some of the areas in Demon Souls were really, really dark, but again, it's atmospheric, and 5-3 was a really cool area. Like, it's another swamp, but in terms of flavor, it was out of sight.
Oh, yeah.
Really disturbing in some ways, but, you know, that was good stuff, though. So I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And even talking about 5-3, that archdemon, it wasn't an ordinary kind of fight. It's like, there's only one archdemon, I think, that's actually a regular fight in that game. Some of them are puzzles. Some of them are just different. But it's interesting that it's usually not the archdemon that is the most powerful boss in a world, or the most difficult boss in the world, but they do embrace, like, being creative and being original. I'd say the bosses I liked most in the game were more traditional fights. The 3-2 boss, the
2-2 the boss, 3-2 boss.
The 1-4 boss. You know, they were really good fights. I mean, they're really, really good fights. They get a lot of hate. I think with my experience from other Souls, you know, I just knew how to fight that kind of boss. I didn't really get invaded just once when I was fighting the old monk, and I had the meat cleaver and the scraping spear, and I wasn't going to use the scraping spear because I'm a fair guy, and he had the dragon bone smasher, I think, and it was a close fight, but then the old monk gave him like some kind of weird acid shot or something, so
right, yeah,
it was a yellow shot, and then I got killed by that. I wasn't expecting it, and then next time I went to fight the old monk, there wasn't anyone there, so
you know, at least that guy got his cool wacky turban thing.
Yeah, I kind of wanted that too, but because it kind of appears in the other games as well, but it looks like a used Q-tip, so this one actually looks cool. So I kind of wanted to get that, but, you know, I'll get make an old monk character sometime.
Yeah, I'll just play my Soul Level 1 run of Demon Souls, and I'll find out it's you invading me, and then you'll get the sweet hat.
I'll invade you. And, you know, it's like a 15 character up and down, I think, in that game, so I could be like Soul Level 15. So just rock the Casbah, and you'll be cursing.
You're a real friend. And then they're just leaving messages in my inbox, like, get good, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I've never received Souls hate mail.
Neither have I, and I'm glad about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad about it, too. It's like,
well, then again, I haven't played Dark Souls yet, where it's more active, so.
Yeah, and people cry more in Dark Souls, I think. No, Demon Souls, I really liked it. It had a lot of traditional stuff that was good. It had a lot of unique stuff to it that was good. I can see where people might find it a bit archaic even compared to Dark Souls, but I didn't really find it that way. The only problem I had was I walked into a couple of pits because I was trying to jump.
Yeah, that was a fun surprise for you, right?
But, you know, there's only a couple of times you have to drop with precision in that game, so I kind of welcomed not having to do with a really bad Dark Souls platforming. Because, spoilers, platforming in Dark Souls is really bad. Cool, I really like the areas. You know, drank them in, and some really cool bosses, some cool weapons. It's like, I use the meat cleaver, and it's really a quality weapon, so quality weapons, you're kind of balanced between strength and dexterity, but this weapon is just really good. It kind of makes me want to use the butcher's knives in the other games, because I've always wanted to use them, but I've always been a dexterity character. But, you know, knocking people flat on their back or knocking them across the room is just, it's just so good. It's just so good.
I don't know. I prefer my dexter than my rapiers because that backstab sound is so beautiful.
I did use a rapier because the meat cleaver has S scaling and dexterity, so I was boosting dexterity anyhow.
Yeah.
And then a gargoyle dropped a spiral rapier, so I was like, okay, it's a rare drop.
I'll nice. Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten that.
And then I made a fatal, and I was like, man, this is the bomb, this thing.
That sweet sound when you backstab, when you get the parry. Yeah. Oh, man. So good.
And knocked, so I sent Yurt sailing off the edge with the Uchi Katana backstab. Yeah.
What's kind of the point? And then you come back and get his armor. I'm like, all right, well.
I kind of use the Uchi Katana in that game for when I want to recover fast from my attacks, because there's a bit of recovery time with the meat cleaver. It's a good weapon still. It's not as godly as Dark Souls. In Dark Souls, Uchi Katana, when I first started using it, I was using like falcons or friggin' rapiers or something. I've been using dex weapons, but then I used the Uchi Katana, upgraded a couple times at the blacksmith, and I hit an enemy. I'm like, holy shit. It's just, you know, I was kind of like, yeah, no, there's no other weapon for me now. This is, you know, I don't care if it makes me weep. I don't care if no one likes katanas. I was like, man, this is the bomb. This is the bomb. So, yeah, I had to have an Uchi Katana with me regardless because of that.
Yeah, I think my set was always, like, rapier, and then, like, oh, if I wanted to switch, Uchi Katana.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. Really good. I use spears a lot in that game, too. Actually, the winged spear is a really good weapon.
I had a dex build, of course, so yeah, it was just really bows, also. My other forte.
One thing I don't like about it is the Eric Stone system. You should be able to rate your spawn at an Eric Stone. And, like, if you go to, we'll say 4-3 Eric Stone, because everyone grinds on the Black Phantom Skeleton in 4-2 to get the pure Bladestone. If you fuck up your your Soul Sucker or your Backstab or whatever the hell you're using, because it's easy to screw up Soul Sucker when it's that low of a range, and that skeleton sees you and it instantly kills you because it's a boss.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have to. It won't take you back to the 4-3 Arc Stone. It'll take you to the 4-2 Arc Stone because you went into the 4-2 territory. I don't think that Arc Stones necessarily have to heal you like a bonfire, but I wouldn't mind if they kind of wrote where you respawned at. Because if you respawn at 4-2, you gotta go back to the Nexus, and you gotta go back to 4-3. It's just too much loading. It's just too much loading, and that kind of got tedious. That only affects you if you're going to grind anything. So that's just on me, I guess. But I kind of would have liked the Arc Stones to work that way. Especially since, by the way, in Shrine of Storms, if you fall off a cliff, you can fall into a different territory and then spawn somewhere completely different.
Is that what happened to you?
Yeah.
Oh, man, and, that's rough.
And so a couple of times I've saved and quit in the middle of a stage, and when I loaded it up, I was somewhere completely different.
Oh, no.
I'm kind of like, what? What's this? But yeah, that's minor quibbles. It's minor quibbles. It's a really good game. Again, it's not for everyone. None of the Souls games are. But if you like the other games, you deserve to give this one a play.
How do you feel about the, well, it's not really a secret boss, but, you know, the secret boss of 1-1?
Oh, yes, the old. Yeah, he's sort of a boss, isn't it? But
yeah,
not in the traditional sense. I kind of sent him off flying on his ass again and again with the meat cleaver, to be honest with you. He never really got a hit on me, but I bet it would probably be difficult given a different build, but with mine, it was just too easy to knock him sailing again and again and again. So I guess I kind of cheesed it, but at the same time, an actually boss-sized boss wouldn't have been sent flying, so.
You know. Well, yeah. I was going to mention it because I also felt a little bit down about it, because, I mean, I had a dex, but I had the rapier, so it was kind of a pattern, you know, you roll back, and then tries to lunge for you, so you roll back again, and then you roll towards him. It's kind of repetitive, so.
He drops the best ring in the game.
He does drop the best ring.
The Colentry rings in the Dark Souls games are the equivalent, and I almost always had those equipped in both games. So, I mean, stamina recovery is just really the best thing in those games. Really, really useful in those games. So, once I had this, I equipped it even at the cost of my cling ring sometimes, so.
Right.
It's just too good.
Well, I'm glad you really enjoyed it, too. I was afraid that you'd be a little off about it since you did play Dark Souls already, and Demon's Souls is still my first and only Souls game, and I hold it dearly.
Well, you know, it's got so many similarities to the other Souls games, but it's different enough. And, you know, when a game is really, really good, it shows. So, I mean, I was going to like it.
Mbasa.
Mbasa. Rocket Adventures is a 1993 action platformer developed by Konami for the Sega Genesis. It stars an opossum knight, Sparkster. He was a bit more reserved in an era where attitude mascots were loud and spouting catchphrases. It managed to spawn two sequels, one on the Genesis and one on the Super Nintendo, both called Sparkster, and a reboot in 2010. It contains scenes of a variety of playstyles, plenty of big sprites with character, and goggles that actually serve a purpose. Player discretion is advised. Now, Rocket Knight Adventures. This game, I kind of was exposed to it 10 years ago and really liked it. But, Chris, do you have any experience with Sparkster yourself? Is this character new to you? Is the series new to you? What have you?
I'm only familiar with Sparkster through, you know, the Genesis game named Sparkster. I didn't even know there was a game before this. And as I was reading up on this before, and apparently it got really confusing with the naming conventions. Like, there's a Super Nintendo Sparkster, but it's not really a sequel to Rocket Knight Adventures or something of that nature. It's really confusing. You might need to explain that to me. But, yeah, as far as I know, the only Sparkster I was familiar with was, yeah, from that Genesis game. And when you brought up, we're going to play Rocket Knight Adventures, I'm like, what even is that? And then I looked at it, I'm like, oh, okay, Sparkster had, like, a game before it, and now I'm getting kind of more of the history of it, and so this is pretty much my first actual playing of a Sparkster game. I mean, I've only known of the game, but I haven't played any of it myself.
Right. Now, I actually haven't played the Sparkster games to any great length myself. As much as I liked Rocket Knight Adventures when I played it, I didn't actually pursue them. And I kind of wanted to play the Rocket Knight game that was released a few years ago, but I forget why I didn't play it. I might not have had a machine to play it on at the time, or it kind of looked sketchy when I was looking at previews for it, too, but I'm kind of more interested to play the Sparkster games now. Unfortunately, they're expensive dollars at this point, but I'm interested to get into them now that I've rekindled my interest in Rocket Knight. Like I said, I played it 10 years ago. I got a Genesis, not 10 years ago, but a bit before that. But where I didn't have a Genesis growing up, my philosophy for buying Genesis games was, if it looked interesting, I may as well buy it and see how it is. Sometimes worked out, sometimes didn't. But I really liked Rocket Knight Adventures. And I kind of like Sparkster. It's kind of dubious because, you know, he's not actually grinning on the box or anything like that. You know, it is definitely a mascot platformer. It's a cut above a lot of them, in my opinion. But Sparkster himself, Chris, how do you feel he differs or is the same as, like, the attitude mascots and animal mascots that plagued the 90s? Like, that was the whole era, like Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel and Arrow the Acrobat and Mr. Nuts, things like that. How does he differ from these guys?
Anytime you talk about, like, 90s mascots, I'm just thinking of, like, Sonic. And, you know, compared to Sonic, he's a lot less loud, so that's pretty cool. But, yeah, he definitely has that attitude going on with the, like, grin going on, his crossed arms. Like, yeah, this is the 90s right here. Thanks.
Yeah. He doesn't have a shit-eating grin, but he does have a grin.
He's got hints of it, so it's there.
I think he's a bit more reserved, and he's a likable character. He's a likable character, but yeah, he definitely has hints of it. But yeah, I mean, you're mentioning Sonic the Hedgehog. At that time, everyone wanted their character to be Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, this...
The cool shoes and the smart attitude and
the... Yeah, like Bubsy the Bobcat. Which, you know, Bubsy the Bobcat on the Super Nintendo, the first game, it's not terrible, but it's extremely mediocre. If that makes sense. It's playable, but barely, kind of thing. It's refreshing to see a game like this that does things differently and does them well. And I have some quibbles with it nowadays, but we'll get into those when we get into the bulk of the game. So we mentioned how he's a little bit different than the regular Attitude mascot, but we'll talk about the game, like how it differs from similar games. And Rocket Knight, it does have like a wide variety of levels and a wide variety of play styles. But the general gameplay, like, how is that? The main gimmick is the jetpack. And some people might not get used to that thing. Is it too wild, or does it perform as intended? Is the game generally accurate with collisions? Things like that.
The jetpack is definitely pretty wild. It's a bit complicated to control. You're not sure where you're going half the time. But, honestly, you do get kind of used to it, so it's not that bad in regard. But I think, yeah, it does take some... I think this game builds up well on how you use a jetpack, but it's still pretty wonky, and you'll notice it throughout the game. Like, it's manageable, but at the same time, it's still going to have weird collisions and just weird controls throughout.
It's necessary for the game, of course, because you have to reach places, but it also renders Sparkster invulnerable while he's using it. So... it's extremely important to avoid attacks with it, too, and also to deliver attacks, because you can damage an enemy while they're not damaging you. Of course, once he falls to the ground, you're prone as you're falling, but it's a very useful defensive mechanism as well, as long as you know like where you're firing him to. The other thing is using your tail to hang off things, and it's mostly in the early levels that you use it. So how is the platforming and the tail gameplay in this game?
I think for the beginning stages, not that bad. But I think in later stages where you need to jump around a bunch of places, you know, you actually need to use your jetpack to get you places, and then you need your tail to hang off things. Then it gets a little complicated. There's especially a stage we'll talk about where you have to go into a different, like, there's a foreground and a background, and that got really complicated for me.
Okay.
So I think that's a little less... controlled than, you know, using the jetpack normally to, like, you know, attack things or navigate. Fortunately, it's not that bad, though, because it's, you know, it's he automatically grabs on the things. But I feel like there's something about it that just didn't feel, you know, controlled or centered or something. Something was off about it for me.
Okay. Now, Crystal, is this a hard game?
Well, Matt, that's a really fun question to ask. I mean, when you see a difficulty settings of children, easy, normal, and hard, I was like, I guess I can handle normal. I mean, that's what the developers intended to be normal. What is the default, right? Normal means default. No, apparently not. That was completely not accurate, and I'm totally offended by it.
Apparently, these difficulties, the latter two difficulties, were locked. In the other versions of the game, you had to unlock them by playing the actual normal mode, which this game says is easy.
So is it actually normal, hard, very hard, and then crazy hard, or something of that nature?
Something like that, yeah. You see, the thing is, as you go up in difficulty, you get less lives, less continues, and you take more damage. So on the crazy hard mode, like or hard mode, as it's called in the North American version, basically you take one hit and you die because you have no lives and no continues. And you can get lives as you play the game, obviously, but you have to be pretty good to progress in hard mode. I've never beaten hard mode. I just haven't put the time into it, and I don't think I really want to. There's no chivos for it.
No chivos. No,
it's I don't know if I want to tackle that. It's an interesting prospect, but I don't know if I want to tackle that. But yeah. My advice to people is, if you're going to play the game, just to learn it, play it on easy. You've got a couple of lives and a couple of continues. Normal is manageable. I played it through on normal this time.
Don't play normal as your first mode, though. I'll tell you, your first time playing the game, don't play on normal, because you'll just get frustrated halfway through the game.
Well, I mean, if you think you can handle it, do it, but just be aware of what you're getting into.
I sure didn't.
moving along with Rocket Knight Adventures, there's 7 stages, but they've got kind of sub-stages to them as well. It's sort of in classic Genesis fare that there's a lot of big enemies and a lot of bosses. I've found that with a lot of Genesis games, especially like Contra Hardcore and things like that, whereas on the Nintendo platform there'd be a lot more stage. On the Genesis, there's a lot of bosses often, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, not necessarily a good thing. As long as it's done well, it's kind of an exciting way to play through a game. So we do start stage one here with a couple of big enemies, like curves that come in from the background and some walking machines, I think. How do you feel that stage one like gets us ready for the rest of the game?
I think stage one is a really good introductory stage. You know, like the cars that come out from the background, I mean, they felt more like mini bosses to me. I mean, they're pretty simple to take on. They don't take that many hits to, you know, defeat. Most of stage one is really just learning how to use your jetpack. I mean, the most you need to do really is, you know, go up or diagonal, and you can use that to hit enemies because they don't really go in weird patterns or anything. So for the most part, stage one is pretty solid. It's good.
There's mostly some cliffs you have to jump over with, and then there's a couple of trees you can hang off of, get some apples, things like that. The first boss you fight is a tank, and, you know, is this a decent boss?
I think it's a decent boss. And as I've learned from, from you said Sega games, lots of bosses, yeah, wow, I didn't realize it would have that many phases.
Yeah, so it's pretty simple to beat the first phase, and then all of a sudden you're falling in a waterfall.
Yeah, for the most part, I think, yeah, this boss is a good introductory boss. Like, nothing too difficult, nothing too simple either. I mean, it's just lots of jetpacking around and going in straight lines, or diagonals, I should say.
You learn what you do a lot of later in the game by bouncing the boss back with your jetpack attack. So you learn that each boss has sort of a timing, that there's, you know, opportunities to hit it, and if you miss the opportunity, you could get punished. So it's interesting. It's a decent introductory boss, I agree.
Yeah, it's not too fast either, so you can probably get the rhythm down on how to, you know, bounce it back with your jetpack.
Yeah. Now, 1-2 takes us almost immediately into another boss fight, but there's a new style of gameplay here.
So the snake boss, yeah, I think it's pretty simple. It doesn't move that quickly around, so you can pretty much figure out when to strike it.
It's a very lightweight introduction to the shmup kind of gameplay that the game has.
Oh, yeah, because it gets really ridiculous later on, the shmup gameplay.
It has its moments, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we eventually come to a castle that has sort of its own mechanics as well. Like, the fire kind of gulps up and
it chases you, kind of, yeah.
I think it always goes in the same places, so it's easy to avoid, but
it does a lot of damage on normal mode.
It does do a lot of damage. And I think it's an auto-scrolling area, so
right.
Effective use of the jetpack is welcome here. How did you like the centipede at the end of this?
The centipede was decent. I think my problem was is that it was really like easy to get down the pattern. Once you like die to it once, you pretty much know where it's going to go next. Like, its moveset is really, I think, set, I think.
Oh, yeah, when it pops out of the holes, it's very set, and then it's the little bomb guys that he sets out. That's the only really difficult part, I guess.
Yeah, just jumping over them and then not getting hit from them afterwards.
Because they're released in the direction towards you, so if you're all over the screen, then you can actually make it a lot harder on yourself.
Right.
But overall, it's not that tough a boss. And you, at this point, you're thinking, oh, okay, this is level 3, I'm done level 3, but then it says, nope, stage 1.
Nope, you're not done yet, it's just stage 1, you're finished, yeah.
Now, stage 2, it drops us right in the water again, and this is actually some kind of swimming mechanics. Sparks is not a very good swimmer, but it's put to the test right away. There's like a weird clown robot or something in the background.
Yeah, whatever's going on.
Spike ball hands trying to kill you. How's this guy?
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty decent boss. I mean, once again, it's like you get the pattern down, and you can take him down pretty quickly. As for Sparkler with swimming, I mean, I don't recall swimming ever being really that good in a platforming game. That's really notable, so, I mean, it's decent.
Mario 3. The Frog Mario, come on.
Frog Mario.
Yeah, I think it's fine swimming, I guess. There's very few places where you actually swim in this game. So, whatever it's... I think I posed a question here. Is it too much to learn a new gameplay mechanic? No, because the swimming is extremely simple. And the boss is simple as well. It's more or less learning how to fight the bosses properly. Just fighting this guy is... It's a rank amateur boss. You can just attack through his arm, I think, when he swings at you, so...
Yeah,
it's just a rank amateur boss.
And then as for the enemies actually in the water, you can actually defeat them. You don't need to dodge them or anything, so that's a breather.
But what do you think of, like, the rest of the stage? All of a sudden, there's, like, waterfalls, and there's spikes, and there's vines. You can go behind waterfalls and pop out of waterfalls, and...
Yeah, this part threw me off so badly, I'm not even sure why, but maybe it was just too much of a jump for me. Like, oh, wow, there's actually now a foreground in the background to deal with, and especially when the boss shows up, and I wasn't sure how you end up back to, like, the foreground or the background. I realized it was a platform later on.
Yeah,
but that's... I think this was kind of too much of a jump in terms of gameplay. It wasn't the swimming, it was this foreground thing that really messed me up.
Yeah, that flying boss was easy, it's just that the background foreground, it kind of makes it more difficult than it actually is. And funnily enough, you never go back and forth between the foreground and background again.
Yeah, so good.
It's just for that. Yeah, good, I guess, yeah. I didn't mind it. It's just, it is... It's a bit weird.
I mean, it's a neat mechanic. It just doesn't work that well in Sparkstar. I mean, not Sparkstar, in Rockin' Adventures.
Then the stage takes a bit of a different turn. All of a sudden, you're over a bottomless chasm on a rail track.
And man, they're really making spirit tracks now.
Yeah. How do you like the spirit tracks here?
As, like, I don't know, someone who actually liked the minecarts in Donkey Kong Country, I mean, I didn't mind this that much. So, I mean, I really did not mind the rail track section. I mean, it was pretty predictable once you realize, oh, you have to duck here and then just jump at these certain spots. But for the most part, the enemies, like, you could kind of avoid them. And the one section, you just pretty much jetpack back and forth, and that takes care of all of them that show up.
Yeah. And then you fight a train. And it does not quit.
Like, I actually like the train boss in all its phases, but it has a lot of phases.
Yeah, it does. It does. The hands phase, I think, is the... Well, it's not actually that bad once you see that the hands actually have a pattern. I think it probably throws people off the first time they fight it to see the hands flying all over the place.
Right. Yeah. Just seeing so many phases threw me off, even though you warned me that there were going to be a ton of phases.
When I destroyed the hands phase, I thought it was done. I was like, oh, shit, it's actually... There's more to it.
No, there's more to it.
Yeah. It's not a tough boss, I guess, but if you're playing on normal, I think you take 2 pellets of damage each time, so... You know, you lose your life pretty fast, and when it's a war of attrition like this, and there's new phases introduced again and again, when you're learning a new phase, your chance of failure is increased, right? So, I mean, this is not the last boss that just won't quit, but it's the first one.
Yeah, I definitely had a lot of trouble with the first phase. I mean, the second and third ones weren't so bad, but yeah, it was just the first one where you're just thrown into it, like, okay, and then that. Once you get the pattern down, it's fine. I guess a lot of these bosses, once you get the pattern down, you can be okay.
I guess it's not a bad boss, but it introduces you to the fact that you gotta be on your toes the whole time through this game.
I'm also glad that the minecart is pretty much glued to.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have been really bad.
Stage 3, though, we go into a cave, and there's kind of lava rising and falling. What's up with this lava?
Yeah, I thought this was a really cool section. It was also really hot because, you know, the lava. But, yeah, there's certain parts.
Really saucy levels, that's right.
I mean, yeah, there's certain parts where you can use your jetpack to move past the lava quickly. And then there's also certain parts where, like, there's something blocking your view. But you'll notice in the lava that it's being, like, you have a reflection, so that's where you jump. So I thought that was pretty neat.
You see, that's the thing. People think, you know, graphics debates are a new thing, but that was a big thing back then. Like, Castlevania Bloodlines does the same thing. It has a similar area to this, and the whole special effects using is, like, you know, reflects the console's muscles. That's really common in these kind of games, and it makes a cool mechanic. Again, it's a mechanic that isn't used ever again in the game, and it probably would have overstayed its welcome if it was, but I like playing games like this that they want to do a lot of things unique, because it's just fun to find them and experience them.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked it. It was short, but it could have been maybe a little longer and complicated, but that's only because I actually kind of like this mechanic.
Yeah. Now, I think we have to swim to the next boss. But we are underwater fighting the next boss, and it's a giant crab.
Of course, my favorite. Actually, the crab isn't that bad. It's also kind of a, you know, pattern boss. Once you figure out where the hands go, we can pretty much wail on it. And there's definitely moments where you can just hit the body when the arms are away. You can even hit it when it's coming up, which I think is great.
Yes, yes. I mostly break one of the arms as it's coming up.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have to break the claws. Can you just break the middle of it?
Yeah, I tried doing that, but, you know, the claws were getting in the way first, so those got broken first.
The thing about the claws, I always destroy the one on the right first because it's pretty impotent. It's the claw on the left I find the most dangerous.
Right.
But it has a lot of posturing. It'll kind of posture twice, and then on the third time, it will go to get you.
Right.
So if you just want to take your time, you just have to charge it on the third time. The crab, I think, starts using projectiles after the claws are gone, but at that point, you are pretty much in control of the voice.
Yeah, and you can just wail on it at that point, too.
But I like that it kind of crawls up from the bottom of the screen and you fight it like that. It's a cool boss.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's interesting. Cool. It's interesting.
There's another lava section now, and you kind of have to ride a walker across the lava. Was this area ours?
I thought it was pretty boring, honestly. I saw, like, a walker in lava, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be like, you know, Magma Dragoon and Mega Man X4, but no, it wasn't. It was just pretty much straightforward, and all the enemies kind of ignore you, I've noticed, or they're really easy to take down.
Yeah. It's more like a skull platform from Mario World.
Yeah.
Yeah, that area is kind of weak, but the boss, the lava reef boss. Let's talk about this.
Man, what a weird boss, but it gets points for being unique and interesting.
Yeah. Give us a rundown.
Well, the first part of the fight is you're on a platform and then it starts sucking in the platforms. So I mean, it does it really slowly and you just jump across them, but then it starts beating it up. So you need to use your jetpack for this or do really well-timed jumps.
Yeah, it goes bonkers fast.
Yeah.
Crispies.
And then after that phase, the ceiling drops down on you, so you need to be standing on the right platform, or you get smashed, and I learned that the hard way. And then the second phase of this fight, well, not the second phase, but, like, its second range of attacks is, it comes out of the middle and then shoots fireballs at you.
Yeah.
Occasionally, it'll spit up bananas for your health, which is pretty welcome, honestly, if you're playing on normal and it's your first time through the game. And then, like, this dude pops out of it, and then you have to hit the dude, and that's how you damage this boss?
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
And then it cycles back to the platform jumping section again.
Yeah. I call it the Lava Reef Zone boss. In many ways, this is, like, almost exactly like the Lava Reef Zone boss from Sonic & Knuckles.
As much as I like Sonic & Knuckles, I barely remember that boss, so...
Oh, it's one of the coolest bosses in the game, in the best song level in the game. Anyways, I digress.
Yes.
It is a bizarre boss. It's kind of like if he was shooting lasers and a chicken popped out or something. But he shoots fireballs and bananas pop out. I think they generally fly in the same area, so if you're on the right-hand platform, it's where you want to be. You usually get two or three bananas. And then jetpack that pig. And it doesn't take many hits, but it's just... It is kind of dire when it starts going really fast. You're kind of like, oh, shit. But, no, it's not bad. It's just really, really strange.
Yeah.
I'm glad it only has one phase.
Yeah, yeah. Or it doesn't get, like, even faster. That would be really bad.
I'm not sure if it changes throughout the fight, but... No, I don't think it does.
No.
But we're taking to stage 4. And this is aboard, like, a carrier ship or something like that. It's like a troop-carrying ship.
Yeah.
Or aircraft or what have you. And you enter the hangar and, like, there's this captain there with a laser in front of him. Again, kind of like Robotnik in Flying Battery Zone. It's like, he's behind it and he's throwing these bombs at you. Let's give a lowdown of this fight.
Yeah, so you're on one side of the screen and this boss is on the other side of the screen and he's blocked off by, like, a laser wall. And he just spends the entire fight just throwing bombs at you. And my first thought is like, oh wow, it's just like the Aghanim fight, except in a Genesis game. I actually did not find that much trouble with it. I mean, the connection from, like, hitting the bombs back with your sword, I mean, you have, like, a big window to do that, so I did this pretty much, I think, probably without getting hit.
Oh, yeah, it's not tough. I think I might have got hit because of how horizontal your slash is. So it flew over top of my sword or something like that. I think you'd have to have really good confidence to do this on hard mode. Because one slip up and you're dead.
But I can imagine that'd probably be bad, yeah.
I guess this is another boss that just won't quit, but you kind of chase him through the stage, so that's fine. That's cool. That's cool. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Eventually, we get outside of the ship on top of it.
Oh, man. This is when the game just really got difficult on me. For the most mundane thing. Who knew that barrels being chucked at you would be so difficult?
Yeah, some of these barrels, they just roll across the ground, other ones bounce. But I don't know if there's actually a pattern to it, because sometimes it's like, oh, here comes one roller and then the bouncer, or here comes two rollers and then the bouncer. If you move backwards a bit, you, like, there's wind up on top of this, so you get carried back.
Right, you're constantly being pushed off the stage.
Yeah, not my favorite area of the game. So I have,
fortunately, that guy at the end that you kill, I mean, it only takes, like, two hits or something. But man, those barrels were murderous.
So I have written in the notes that are the barrels the real bosses?
Yes.
So we get to the end of the ship, and I think it's Axel, Gira, and the princess are in the cockpit, right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, the story is really irrelevant. I mean, you're just like, oh, okay, I guess he's up to save the princess, and that's pretty much all you're doing in this game.
Yeah. Well, Axel, Gira kind of torments you, and you're kind of on his tail through the whole game.
Axel's a jerk, yeah, well...
He's a bit of a prick, but...
We'll get to his real prickiness, so...
Yeah, we will. We will. Now, we go underneath the ship, and I don't think there's wind here, but there are, like, swinging platforms.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I mean, I'm an old hat at Circus Charlie, so I was like, fuck, that's easy. But we get to a boss at the end of it when we're hanging, I think, from our tail to fight him.
Yeah...
Let's give us a lowdown of the boss.
So basically you're hanging up from this pipe on the top, and this boss comes in, and, like, occasionally he'll, like, shoot out fire or something. I mean, I think for the first two hits, you need to hit him with your jetpack, so try not to, like, jetpack yourself to death, like, by falling off in the air, but,
Yeah.
Apparently for, like, the second phase of this fight, these guys come out from, like, the carrier plane, and they have barrels, and I thought that you had to dodge them as well as this boss that's shooting fire at you now, but apparently you can just jetpack through the barrel guys, and those barrels damage the boss.
Yeah, they're like bombs, and you can just slice them, and they fall down and hit the boss, so it's actually quite an easy fight. Eventually, we go back in the ship after fighting this boss, and there's, like, a long tunnel of laser gates that are on timers, and there's pigs that come in and shoot you. So, it's just kind of tedious. You're sitting there waiting for the gates to turn, and then a pig will appear, just as the gates appear, and you have to slice them. And their range for their guns are literally the range for your sword, I think, so you have to be on your toes for them. So it just takes a really long time to get through it, and sometimes the collisions are a little bit off on the laser gates.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spent most of this fight, like, walking really slowly and ducking a lot.
Yeah, ducking helps, ducking helps. If you're patient, you get through it, but it'll take a little bit of time.
It definitely takes a bit of time, yeah.
You can't even, like, dash through the laser gates, so...
Yeah.
There's no real time savers there.
At least you're not timed in this game, which is, like, I'm really thankful for.
Yeah. I bet some people can damage boost through it, but I'm not a speedrunner, so...
Yes. Get a speedrun Rocket Knight Adventures.
Now, eventually, we do get to the real boss, and I did find this guy... It'd be one of the tougher bosses, I guess, in the game, just because... Well, let's talk about him.
I mean, I thought the lava reef zone boss was weird. I think this one is pretty out there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he spends, like, what, the first, like, 5 seconds of the fight, just, like, doing this hula dance, I'm like, what is this?
Hula slam dancing.
Yeah. And then, like, stuff from the ceiling starts falling on you, and at least the stuff on the ceiling is, like, decent to dodge. But then he starts shooting, like, these giant, like, red balls at you, and you only have, like, a small window to hit his, like, belly.
Yeah, yeah. I usually got 2 dashes in. I had trouble with the debris at first, but then I sustained at the very left. And, like, if you just dash in place, you spin.
So yeah, yeah.
I just ate up the debris as it fell towards me, so that helped a lot. I think it's the window of opportunity that you mentioned is what makes this fight kind of tough. And especially if you're on normal mode or hard mode, heaven forbid, you'll be taking a lot of damage this fight, I think.
It's been rough.
But hit him enough times in the guts when he's done this hula dancing, and it doesn't actually take very many hits. Probably they're being merciful because of the, like you said, the window of opportunity.
Right.
So it's not actually that bad. So the Captain Pig, he starts running around, and he's nothing. It's just kind of...
A few slashes and he's down. Him up, yeah. I mean, he could get you if you're at low health, because the belly dancer just wrecked you.
Yeah.
But
thinking of the belly dancer now, it's not that difficult to fight. It's just in the moment. It's
a lot happening, yeah.
Stage 5, I think we're going to now?
Yes.
This is sort of like the enemy city.
Yeah, the shmup section.
Yeah, well, there's a shmup section, and you're kind of dodging...
Missiles.
How'd you like this phase?
This is kind of slow. It was a lot more welcoming than stage 4, I'll say that much. Yeah, the missiles come down pretty slowly, so it's pretty easy to just get in between them and dodge most of them.
Yeah, there's some crazier patterns at the end, but... Nothing too bad. You shouldn't take too much damage from the missiles. Eventually you fight a walker, and it's kind of like a Zyrus Big Core from the Gradius series at first. I mean, it's literally a Gradius boss.
Yeah.
And you have to destroy the core, and the core is a pig.
This part was pretty cool, actually. Cool and interesting. One of the phases, though, it was really difficult to figure out, like, if I was actually hitting it, because it doesn't really flash sometimes. I think it's, like, the second phase, where it's shooting the lasers at you.
Yeah, and those lasers, you can go between them, I think, right at the start, but I think you have to get out of there because once they start going up and down, you really can't stay between them.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I don't think it was that bad, but, I mean, it starts doing some weird patterns near the end of its fight, but it's nothing too bad. It's pretty slow.
Towards the end, it literally becomes Intruder from Salamander with the whipping arms.
Yeah.
They're not difficult to dodge, but it's a really cool... I don't know if it's an Easter egg or reference or what you refer to
it. It is a Konami page. Game, so...
Yeah. I thought it was cool. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, it was a good mini-boss.
It was good.
Now, I think there's a couple of challenge rooms now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, most of the challenge areas are basically you gotta race to the finish from these spike soldiers, and you gotta get to the exit first. They probably do a lot of damage. I'm not really sure.
They instantly kill you. Are they...
Maybe? I'm not sure. Because I got to the exit quick enough, but that's pretty much the bulk of it. I mean, when you're going down, and you start from the top of the stage, and you have to work your way down. It's pretty much the gist of it. There's one of them that's an auto-scrolling one where ground is coming up at you, and you got to do these tight sections.
Yeah, there's a lot of jetpacking here.
Yeah, I like this part actually. It's a lot more fun than the robots chasing you down sections.
Yeah, and the final section of this, I think, is a giant robot chasing you.
Yeah, yeah. Which is pretty simple, actually, because the robot isn't really that quick, and the path is pretty laid out for you with the apples.
Kind of a red herring, though, Crystal, because...
Because the real challenge is at the end of the stage.
Give us a rundown of the boss. Like, what do you reach at the end of this chase, and then what happens?
Oh, man, at the end of this chase, now you have your own giant robot to fight the robot that's been chasing you. And the whole point of this fight is, it's like Rock'em Sock'em Robot. You gotta punch it, except Axel is an ass, and he has, like, the timing is terrible, and your punch sometimes doesn't hit him, or, like, the collision is just weird, and it's not a cool robot fight anymore.
You see, it's easy to find out the distance that you have to close the fight Axel. The thing is that he will stop on a dime, and it's like... he stops as you swing, and then as you recover from your swing, he moves forward and swings. I think I asked you when you were playing this if you were saying any curse words about Axel gear, and I think this is the...
Oh, yeah.
this is the section I was referring to. It's probably most people's least favorite fight in the game. I think your friend Technomaniac, Nima, he played through Rocket Knight Adventures on stream once, and I think he had some choice words for it, too. So, I mean, I don't hate the fight or anything like that, but it is definitely the sketchiest fight in the game. And it doesn't take many hits to defeat Axel's robot.
No, but it sure feels a lot quicker when he's punching you, though.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It does have a bit of strategy to it. You kind of move backwards to get him to chase you. You're trying to try to get him to walk in range of your robot's arm attack. So the thing is, once you reach the far left wall, he will stay a distance away from you. I think generally you have to move towards him to get him to move after you again. So there's kind of a back and forth between Sparkster and Axel, kind of trying to fake each other out. And that's cool. It's just that the fight is kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Especially after all of that you've just done in the stage.
It has so much potential, but then that happens.
I still like it. It's just kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Now, the next level, I think, is all shmup.
Yep. I mean, out of all the shmup sections they've had, I mean, they've built up to this one. I do like the shmup section a lot. Yeah. It has some, like, I guess mini-bosses, if you want to call them that. Like, there's one pig that, like, shoots a laser. I mean, it's really easy to dodge around this.
Yeah.
So.
It's very Gradius with the enemy formations that they come in, and I think you defeat the line of them to get a power-up or whatever.
Yeah.
That's very Gradius.
Yeah.
It's very Gradius. But it's a fun section. But it's a very short section because the boss is actually most of the level, I think.
The boss isn't exactly as fun as the rest of the section is.
This kind of boss, it's done in, like, R-type and things like that, where you fight, like, an enemy cruiser. The stage kind of goes around it.
Right.
It becomes the stage. That's why I'm kind of disappointed in this boss, because it's so small. Yeah, it's supposed to be a Star Cruiser.
It's also a little sketchy. Not as sketchy as a robot fight, but it does some, like, wonky things that are not okay in my book. Like, warping on you, that's not cool.
The reason, I guess, it has to warp is because Sparkster can't turn around.
And there's definitely, like, parts when you try to hit, like, the underbelly. Like, there's a part you need to hit there, and sometimes that doesn't, hit correctly or something. Like, I just had lots of weird issues with this, like, boss.
It does have the worst collision, I think, of any of the bosses you fight. It's an alright fight, I guess. It eventually splits in two, and you kill the back half of it really quick. And then the front half of it becomes, like, a walker mech that does weird jump.
Weird jump things.
Spread shots. And, like, this is a really long fight, and this is the part of it that's, it's not so difficult.
It just takes a long time.
It takes a long time, and there's, like, there's a position you're basically safe if you're up in the upper left corner when it's jumping, and then you have a very low window of opportunity again to fight this thing, because there's a red ball or something that activates. It throws a red ball.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah. It's weird.
So this fight wouldn't be so bad if you could damage it the whole time.
Instead of waiting, yeah.
Yeah, so the waiting is what makes it more difficult. The spread shot's not that hard to dodge once you find out where to position yourself on the screen to, you know, weave it back and forth through most of them, but it also shoots like a homing laser and all that, so getting the shmup part of it down pat, that's kind of simple. It's just the waiting. It's just the waiting after a really, really long boss that just drives it home. Probably my least, well, I don't know if it's my least favorite boss. I'm kind of trying to say that the Rock'em Sock'em Robots is my least favorite fight, but I don't think it's my least favorite boss conceptually. This is probably my least favorite boss conceptually.
Just the weird walker jumping around. I was like, what's happening anymore? Also, what's with the jump? I mean, you're in space already, right? Like, why would you need to jump? I don't understand that part.
Yeah, it's quite strange. But it's interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, get that.
So finally, we get to, like, the Death Star that we had to go to fight the Emperor Pig. The Emperor, as it turns out, is a Roboborg, but you have to fight him as soon as you get here. Kind of like the Death Egg Zone, kind of like fighting Silver Sonic.
Kind of, yeah.
So how was the battle with the Emperor?
You know, I didn't find the Emperor that bad. He did take me a few retries, but he's another boss where if you get the pattern down, you can pretty much wail on him.
I find that when he jumps at you, you can use the dash attack, kind of knock him back. And then he gets stuck in the loop of doing that, so you do a lot of damage to him that way.
Yeah. I had a lot more trouble in his second phase when he kind of does this weird legs that shoot out at you thing.
That's, again, is another kind of evasive maneuvers kind of fight, and knowing that your jetpack can go through things, it's not that bad. He dies pretty quick. It's at least a quicker phase than his first phase.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you have to fight, like, a bunch of, like, it's almost Terminator style. You go through
and robot things, right?
Yeah, kind of ton of robot emperors there, and they're simple. They take a couple of hits, and I guess
they're neat designs, though. You know,
yeah. Well, they're not meant to be tough enemies.
Yeah, yeah, they're
meant to be half finished, right? So yeah, they're cool. They're interesting, but yeah, I like them. Eventually, though, we get to one of the main fights. Like, the one that's been building up to all game. It's Sparkster v. Axel. How was the fight against Axel, Chris?
For me, I'm going to say the first part of this fight was a lot of button mashing for me because our swords would always clash. Yeah. So it was really difficult for me to find that window of where my sword would actually connect and hit him.
I think he generally only shoots two, but I mean, this might be my experience with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was my first time playing as well, so maybe I just didn't get the pattern down as I should have. But, I mean, like, when he jumped around, I mean, that wasn't as bad. It was just mostly for me, just the fact that every time I tried to hit him, his sword beam would connect with mine, and then, you know, they'd cancel each other out.
To make it an epic sword fight, that's
awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely just use your regular sword slash, and this is not your jetpack. You get punished, I think, if you use the jetpack.
Yeah.
And he's not that bad to dodge when he goes in the air, so.
No, I mean, he goes off screen, but it's pretty easy to figure out where he's gonna, like, shoot.
So he's easy to wear down in this phase, but what happens after we've pummeled him for a while?
Suddenly, like, the ship breaks, and now you're on those poles clinging on for dear life while he's, you know, flying around like a prick. I didn't find the second half of the fight that bad, but if he knocks you off those poles and you get thrown out into space, that's not cool.
Yeah. I kind of like to get him when he's at the bottom of his loop and then dash towards him. But, you know, you could use your slash and then probably finish him off quicker. I used the slash, I think, to take care of missiles.
Yeah, that's what I did. I mean, the missiles aren't that bad to dodge, but if they do hit you, yeah, it's usually you find yourself floating out into space.
The slash is pretty much required when he starts spinning in towards you.
Right.
Like dash before he can do it and then get out of the way.
I mean, fortunately, like, you know, you just auto-grab into poles, so, I mean, I usually use the jetpack sometimes to just dodge him and then just, you know, grab back on.
Yeah, so it's not that bad. It's a cool and interesting fight, though. I think it's an appropriate rival fight.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah. I think I wrote in that review 10 years ago that I thought Axel was a bit too generic, but I actually warmed up to him in this playthrough. He's cool and he's interesting.
Even after the robots fight, man.
Even after the robots fight. He's a decent villain. He's a decent rival. He's a bit of a prick, but, you know, that's what they are.
Does he have more character development in later games?
I have no idea. Like I said, I haven't played
him. We'll have a deep and interesting backstory.
Is you get a yellow scarf and sunglasses. After we fight Axel, I think we have to go through another couple of rooms with those clones.
Yeah. It's pretty straightforward, so it's nothing too notable.
We eventually get to the final boss of the game. In the immortal words of Gradius, destroy the core.
Destroy the core. I would say this is also kind of like the slam dance, where I'm like, why is this boss just bouncing around? Is that all it does? But apparently, like, it bounces around a bit, and then a target pops out of one of its...
Yeah.
Tolls, and then you have to, like, jetpack to strike it. I mean, it very rarely does it show up on the bottom, where you can just easily jump and slash it.
You could use the slash, like, your projectile blade to fight it, but I find it generally better to use a jetpack because it's a bit safer.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not just bouncing around the whole time. It eventually gets some other attacks, yeah?
Yeah, eventually it starts moving to other phases where it starts shooting, like, lasers at you.
Yeah.
Or, these rings at you. But it's basically the same concept. You just gotta, like, you know, jump around and dodge these things while hitting the target that pops out.
Yeah.
So overall, I don't think this fight was that bad. I mean, so if you get hit, I mean, it's not that much damage, surprisingly, on normal mode, but I think it was pretty manageable.
No, it has a lot of phases, like you said, but its attacks are pretty manageable.
Is it interesting?
It is interesting. It is cool. So it takes a long time to fight them, but once we defeat them, it's time to re-enter the atmosphere.
After you defeat the core is still not finished with you, because as you're re-entering the atmosphere, the core will come to chase you down, and you're pretty much in a cap, so you can only go left and right, so you spend this entire fight dodging. You can't attack it at all.
If you fail this fight, you have to start the core from the very beginning, but the game is actually quite generous here, and it refills your life bar.
Right.
So, thumbs up for that, because it would have been a dick move.
I know.
Just to come down and whip you and die.
And then go all the way at the start of stage 7 or something. Like, oh man.
It shoots rings at you and whips its tentacles at you, and it's simple to dodge them.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
It's just kind of the fact that you can't fight back, and you know, you're ending the game now. There's this sort of element of surprise is the only way it could ever kill you, I guess.
Yeah, and it feels like it's a, you know, a long wait. You can it's, I mean, it's pretty much all the same patterns, really, so I guess in a way you get bored of just dodging it.
I don't know, I kind of like it thematically, because you're once it starts burning up and you're going to safety, that's a pretty interesting way to cap off the game.
I did make it back to Earth with only, like, 2 bars of health left, so I guess that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So we kind of breezed over the game there. The levels are kind of shortish but longish. They're full of bosses, and the bosses can be a bit extended. You're the newbie to Rocket Knight here, though. So did you enjoy Rocket Knight Adventures? I know you kind of got in a little over your head because you started on a higher difficulty. No fault of your own, obviously. But how did you enjoy this game?
I think overall I did enjoy it, although I feel like I may be a bit bitter about... So, I mean, I think I would have been more receptive to it if I actually started on difficulty that was really normal and not misnamed normal. But overall, I did like... The levels are cool. It's interesting. I really, like... I know the levels are, like, all over the place, like, in terms of design and what they do. Like, some are shmups and some are not... I do appreciate the level design was really varied. I think they kept the game fresh and interesting. As for bosses... I guess this is a Genesis thing. I didn't really grow up with a Genesis, so I'm not accustomed to bosses having a million phases. I think that was also a unique aspect of it, for my experiences of seeing all the different phases, but otherwise, yeah, some of them got really tedious, and I guess some of them could have been improved, but overall, it was solid. It was a good game. And I am interested enough in it to actually play it on true normal, so I don't feel like I'm being cheesy with it or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Now, have you, like, do you have any experience with these 90s mascot games, and to give an idea of how it differs from them?
I mean, the most I know about 90s mascots is really just Sonic. I mean, Sonic was pretty much a thing. I mean, yeah. I don't remember characters like Spyro. I don't know if Spyro was the 90s or, like, the early 2000s or something.
Well, I mean, this whole 90s platformer mascot, that's, like... The 16 and 32/64-bit era. There's so many platformers on the N64. PlayStation had, like, Croc and Spyro.
Oh, man, like I forgot all about Croc.
You gotta brush up on your gobbles, yeah. It's I actually kind of like Croc. That's beside the point. That's beside the point. I don't want to digress too much.
Right.
But, like, if you look at Bug on the Saturn or things like that, often...
Does Cool Spot count as a mascot?
Yeah, I'd say he does, but Chester Cheetah's games are way more this category than Cool Spot, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel and Arrow the Acrobat and Mr. Nuts the Squirrel. Things like that.
What are all these weird 90s mascots? Are these all mostly Genesis stuff or something, or just games I totally were not aware of?
Some of them are cross-platform.
Alright, well, I guess I wasn't really into the mascots then.
Yeah, well, the thing is, everyone wanted to be Sonic, right? And because Sonic was proving to be decent competition for Mario at the time, it's hard to stop Mario, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, they even made a gold amiibo of Mario, for fuck's sake, so Mario is the shit.
Anyway.
I do like Rocket Knight that it does things differently and does them well. Too often with these 90s, again, mascot games, they're not that great. I mean, like, Crash is a good game, and the Spyro games were good, and I forget if Croc is good or not, but I mean, I enjoyed it. But there's so much shit there, too. There's so much shit. But Rocket Knight's not one of them.
So from my limited experience with 90s mascots, I mean, Sparkster seems pretty... He's alright, he's pretty tame. He's, like, not obnoxious as Sonic is. I mean, I guess Sonic just got more obnoxious as the years went by, but...
Yeah. It's just good to see a game that's good. And I showed you my old review. I was really taken with Rocket Knight Adventures when I played it, like, 10 years ago. I don't like it as much now as I did then. I was just gushing at that time. I still really like it. I still think it's a fantastic game. It definitely has some flaws. It definitely has some collision issues. It definitely has some strange gameplay choices, but it's still a really solid game. And I'd rather someone play Rocket Knight Adventures on the Genesis than, say, Tin Head or Aero the Acrobat or something like that. I think it's a better game. Aero the Acrobat's not bad, but it's mediocre. That's the thing about these games. They're very mediocre, but, you know, they rely on a shit smear grin on the cover to sell them.
Were those also Konami games? Because, I mean, it is a Konami game, so Konami games essentially have a standard, so I guess in a way it's expected that Rocket Knight Adventures was as decent as it was.
Being a Konami game, I mean, Konami and Capcom are, like, the big names for people on, at least on Nintendo consoles when I was growing up, and they could basically do no wrong at that time, but, you know, they're not as good now. Like, Konami's name doesn't have the gravitas it used to, and Capcom's name certainly doesn't have the gravitas it used to. In terms of Konami, yes, definitely they had a standard back then. Not always followed, but definitely very common that you find a good Konami game. I had heard about Sparkster before I picked it up, but when I did and actually played it, because that's just my thing, I like to own a game before I play it. It was great. It was great. I still think it's great. I'm not gushing like I used to about it, but it's still a really solid game. Yeah, I like the music. I like the aesthetics of the game. Sparkster, you know, he gets a bit, you know, crosses arms when he's idling.
Yeah.
Things like that. So there's a lot of character to the game, and I think that goes a long way with endearing it to me as well, because I don't like very, very sterile games. I like games with a lot of character, because it's just more fun. It's just more fun.
It's cool and interesting.
It makes it more cool and interesting, that's right. So we've reached the end of the podcast. As always, if you want to reach me, my Twitter is Mattazoic, MattoZoyc. Like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. My website is mattazoic.com, spelled the same way. How can we reach you?
Here's a change of plans. My new Twitter handle, where you can reach me, is twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU. Although I still have my Chrysalis account, so you can use that to hear me complain about games still. That's not my gaming Twitter, so you can just read a lot of Zilly 2 tweets or my ridiculously named ships in FTL.
Right, so you've changed your name, but it's like if a can of SpaghettiOs got a new label, it's like, oh, new label, but same great taste. So
what was that analogy?
It's like when you buy can of spaghetti or something for years and then change the fucking label. And it's like, oh,
it's got a new sauce, but it still tastes great. You know. And yeah, hey, let's tell us what your website.
I'll never forget about the cast where Matt compared me to a can of SpaghettiOs.
Tell us about your website.
And my website is clocktown.net.
Okay, and where can we reach Arrow?
Arrowcast. You can reach Arrow at twitter.com/Arrowcast, AGROCAST.
Okay, so that wraps it up for February then. What are we going to play in the merry, merry month of March?
In the merry, merry month of March, we are going to be playing a game that I've wanted to play ever since it came out on the GameCube. And I don't know how long you want to play it, but it always had a really cool aspect of taking pictures and going on your fun little adventure with your friends. We're going to play Beyond Good and Evil, but the HD version on the PS3, so it's going to be all nice graphics. Ooh.
I've wanted to play it for a long, long time as well, and I had the opportunity a couple of times, but, you know, something about games like that, I just kind of like to have my own copy and sit down with it, so I'm excited to play it.
Yeah, by the time you really wanted the copy, it was like $90, and you're like, alright.
Yeah, I've been looking to play it for a long time, too. It's a game I've heard raved about, so we'll see how accurate that is. See how accurate that is. I gotta put on my super analytical glasses or whatever and just rip it, the new one. No, I'm gonna try to enjoy it. It looks good. I want to play it for a while, so I'm gonna have fun with it.
And people get really excited every time there's news that's Beyond Good and Evil 2. Like, people just flip out anytime there's news like that, so, I mean, that must mean the first one got really well receptive.
Anyways, folks, we will delve into Beyond Good and Evil in the merry, merry month of March. Until then, take care, and cheers.
Cheers.